Hello, thank you for clicking play. If you're passionate about supporting small business, small creators, and are enjoying the podcast, I would love if you considered supporting me and the show via Patreon. You'll find the link in the show notes, where you can join us from as little as £3.50 a month. You'll be supporting the making of the show, enable me to keep the show ad-free, get behind-the-scenes content, blog posts, and lots more. Just click the link in the show notes to find out more. Now, on with the show. Hello and welcome to Independent Thinking, the podcast exploring a new era for the high street. We celebrate those who are doing wonderful, creative things in the most difficult of circumstances. We'll be going behind the scenes of businesses and shops you love, that you look forward to visiting and that add joy to your high street. I'm your host, Alexandra. Welcome along. Welcome back. This week, as we explore other stories from our high street, we chat all things charity shops. We all know the pressures that non-essential retail has been under this past year, but what about the impact on a sector who rely on retail income to support those who are living with long-term health conditions or supporting and working with the NHS during one of the most testing times in its history? How has charity retail been impacted by this year and by changes to our high streets? To explore this, I'm delighted to be joined by Lawrence Cowan and Carol Edmonds from Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland. They are Scotland's health charity supporting people and their families across the country who have chest, heart and stroke conditions to make sure everyone lives as full a life as possible. And their cause is even more pertinent this year. They also have some of the quirkiest and most fun charity shops on the high street. We chat to Lawrence and Carol, their Director of Fundraising and Head of Retail Field Operations respectively, to chat about the wonder of finding a bargain, giving your old clothing a new lease of life, how important charity shops are to our communities, and how they incorporate a neighbourhood stories into each boutique. Enjoy! Lawrence, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's great.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you. So we'll be joined by Carol later on in the show to talk about the nuts and bolts of your retail operation and how you put the shops together. But first, I wanted to speak to you on a fundraising side. Now, retail has had a very tumultuous year, and that goes without saying. But for charity shops, it's been a different challenge entirely, mainly due to how much income, you know, is generated through these shops. So I just wanted to sort of ask you, how has this year been and how have you weathered this storm?
It's been full of highs and lows, which probably wouldn't be surprising to say, but to give you an impression, retail pre-pandemic made up about 50% of the charity's income.
50, like 5-0?
5-0.
Yeah. Wow, okay.
So a big chunk of the charity's income. And then you add on our big fundraising events. So, you know, we did the big Fourth Rail Bridge Ab sale, for instance. That's one of our kind of flagship events. So, you know, almost overnight, that evaporates.
Yeah.
So, you know, from an organisational point of view, I think that, you know, that created quite a lot of concern, because you see the way you operate and your business model for bringing in the income, that kind of has to stop, and it's through no fault of your own. So it's something totally uncontrollable, and you know, pretty much unforeseen. So you have to deal with that, and it happens almost instantly. Mm-hmm. So that was a real, but I'd probably use a different word, oh dear moment.
Yeah, yes, sure.
when it comes to you know, the charity, and it really was a fight for survival.
Because did you have a sort of crisis talk at the beginning of all lockdown and just think, right, what are we going to do? How are we going to navigate this? Or was it just a sort of slowly evolving picture that you started to kind of emerge?
I think it was one of those things where I think if you asked anyone who'd been through the pandemic from a kind of director's point of view, that there was that kind of, from January onwards, there was that background noise of COVID, mm-hmm, and it was happening mm-hmm. somewhere else. Mm-hmm, and you're thinking, actually, we need to kind of prepare for this just in case it comes. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes, we need to prepare for it because it's probably likely to come, but not in as big a, you know, as big a level as maybe elsewhere. And then you think, oh, actually, it's here and it's going to happen really quickly. And then by that point, it sweeps through the country. So, you know, there were a number of crisis meetings, you know, daily directors meetings about how we are going to manage the COVID crisis. And let's not forget, because Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland cares for people with chest conditions, and COVID itself is a chest condition. And then the development of long COVID. And the impact of COVID on hospitals meant that actually people were coming into the community and the demand for our service just went through the roof. Mm-hmm. So you saw our income halve, the demand for our service is pretty much double. So it was one of those moments where I think it, you know, there was so much change going around about what anchored us was the fact that who we were, a Scottish charity who cared for people coming out of hospital. And, you know, we are all about making sure that people do more than just survive after they come out of hospital and they really live. So that was our mission. You know, we didn't lose sight of that mission. And we had some very, very difficult decisions to take early on when it came to closing the retail chain. We had to, you know, make sure that all of the shops were closed quickly, you know, safely. And then it was literally straight after thinking about that, we were like, okay, how are we going to be, you know, innovative, entrepreneurial, and get to work on actually saving this charity? Mm-hmm. And that was, so there was a mixture, that's what I mean, there's a mixture of lows and highs. The lows was actually the fact that that everything was about to change. The highs were actually seeing the teams unleashed. And then you had your digital fundraising you know, events, which became incredibly successful.
Yeah.
Our media team went into overdrive to actually be really honest with our supporters and say, actually, this is you know, make or break for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we need people to come to our aid. There's £500,000 a month that we are losing because our shops are closed.
Gosh.
And events have stopped. So again, we went out really honestly with our communications. Mm-hmm. And then with our retail, you know, everyone could see that our retail was closing because when they were on the high street, the shops were closed. So people wanted to rally to us because they loved the brand on the high street. Mm-hmm. So we're quite fortunate in that sense. But actually, the team pulled an absolute blinder in terms of actually digging in, digging deep, supporting each other, and really just innovating. Mm-hmm. Without any restrictions, the excuses go, because you try it, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But so I remember at that point, you know, we were trying all sorts of things, and it was a scary time. Mm. You know, the practical things aside, emotionally it was very difficult for everyone, because you see what you're used to and it gets thrown in the bin, basically, by a virus.
Yeah.
And you know, it was incredibly difficult, you know, personally, because you know you spend your every waking moment thinking about, okay, well, what do we do to keep this charity going? Mm-hmm. But we're all driven by the fact that we're caring for people with our conditions, and that was what kind of held us all together and helped us dig deep. So it was a mixed situation.
You've got quite a unique position, I think, like you say, in this, as a charity that looks after people with lung conditions particularly. And so I guess you're not only are you holding the concerns of the staff about their roles and about their job, but you're also holding a lot of concerns, and you're fielding, I'm guessing, a lot of concern from the public, concern from people for you know, hospitals about this, a lot of fear. And I guess it's a lot as a director, it's a lot to hold, a lot to, like you say, personally. To, how did you find that? Must seem really challenging all the while working from home, and, you know, having all that going on. So it's, has that been, that must have been a real challenge.
It is. And, you know, I've got two young kids at home as well. So, I mean, they love the camera at the best of times. So if they have a camera in the house, then, yeah, they'd bound to make an appearance. So the, But it's that sense that you really, I suppose there was that, but then there's also the clarity of what you needed to do. So yeah. I think, you know, as a group of directors, but as an organisation as well, I think we reacted very well in a crisis. Mm-hmm. We found that out through COVID. And, you know, because yes, we had the plans in place, but it's the people who are in the organisation and their approach and their philosophy that matters.
Yeah.
And we found that everyone's philosophy during this time of crisis was to pull together. Mm-hmm. And that really made the difference.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as you said, we were in a position where more people needed our services and we had less money to do it with. But actually, you know, from our services team, for example, we went digital very, very quickly, which is quite a challenge when you think some stroke survivors have communication difficulties, you know, lots of people with isolation and loneliness, you know, experiencing that. So, you know, we pivoted very, very quickly and made sure that we contacted everyone who was receiving our services or who needed us via phone or via you know, via the computer if they had one. Mm-hmm. And also we realised that the NHS was under a significant strain. So what we did, we worked very closely with the NHS, and so what we did was we actually started new services to reduce the pressure on the NHS.
Good Lord, wow.
Which is one of those things where it's quite counterintuitive, but actually what we did was we realised with COVID-19 all the wards were filling up with people who have very serious lung conditions, but also we want to try and avoid people needing to go back into hospital. So what our service does is it actually keeps people well at home so that they're less likely to turn up at A&E or go to or need more complex hospital treatment. So we, from a services point of view, we said, right, okay, we'll do what we do best to alleviate pressure on you. And we'll kind of think about what we do, you know, how we not afford it, but, you know, how we pay for it kind of later. But we knew that by doing that, we actually achieved as an organization more relevance and a new relevance during COVID,
mm-hmm.
which actually will see us in good stead and did see us in very good stead for fundraising during the pandemic, but sees us in good stead for fundraising in the future and as retail opens, because actually more people heard about Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland than ever before during this whole pandemic, because we were helping the NHS, we were supporting government, we were actually out there in the media, we were helping people with our volunteers, you know, making sure that people weren't isolated and lonely, getting their shopping.
Yeah.
We were everywhere.
Yeah.
And that was one of the points where we decided, right, okay, this crisis, we can either just our shoulders could go down, or we could do what everyone who we care for does and actually stand up and really push to make sure that we do more than just survive. And that was our philosophy. And you see that as retail reopened as well. You know, we made sure that when retail reopened, we didn't reopen with a, oh, well, you know, our doors are open. We made sure that we reopened with a bang, and we're here.
Yeah.
Here's the reason why we need to come, is because there are people out there more than ever who need our help because of COVID. So, you know, it's been up and down, but
yes.
But we dug deep, and you know, this year has been a, you know, we're now the ship's steady, and we are now, you know, looking forward to rebuilding better next year as well. So
yeah, well, I'm glad to hear it. I think it's really interesting as well for the charity. I'm thinking as well, I think you've not only gained I think more people gain understanding the cause, I think, as well, because I think respiratory diseases were often things that people thought of, but, you know, young people might have felt that they were less susceptible to, or and I think there's something being a great leveler of actually us looking at our health quite differently. And I think as a health charity, I think that's really interesting. I can ask about your team. So the team obviously is really crucial, and you've obviously are so central. So this kind of pivoting that you did then, thinking about retail and your approach, a couple of things here, because I thought, you know, are these changes that you've been talking about, are these things that were already in the offing for the charity and that were simply thought, you know, actually these are plans we have in the back of our minds, we just need to accelerate them? Or was there something around, because I think particularly the early days of lockdown, there was this feeling of like, oh, I don't know. People really, it was incredible. People were moving at paces. You know, people had this like dynamism within them that was, I don't know, it's kind of hard to imagine now because we're like a year in. At the time, it was, people were thinking the unthinkable. And yeah, tell us a little bit about that team and the role that the team all played together there.
Well, it all stems from actually understanding where our audience and where our service users were. So that, you know, we could have got to the point where we were chasing after lots of different ideas, but actually it came to, what we were very good at initially was to think, okay, right, so the people who we care for are going to be isolated, lonely, they're going to be worried about the pandemic, they'll be some of the most at-risk people. You know, our colleagues in the NHS will need us because the pressure will be immense. But then also from our, these are the same people who are our donors, our supporters, and our shoppers as well. So these, so everyone will be scared. Everyone will need the best information they can on COVID. What's the latest changes? What does it mean if you have a chest, heart, and stroke condition? Let's not forget, in Scotland, one in five of us have some sort of chest, heart, and stroke condition. So
wow, okay. Yeah,
so that's you know it's a big part of people's everyday lives. Mm. So that's the starting point, and so we realised that was really where we wanted to be. We wanted to make sure that we were there to almost say to people, "We are here with you. We're living this with you. Mm-hmm. We're not a charity that's at arm's length from you. So we are. We know what you're going through, and please get in contact with us at any time." So that was the foundation. Mm. And then when it came to some of the ideas that came forward, you know, our pivot to online, fundraising was probably fundraising events. The idea that you would ever have a fundraising event that was online, that wasn't like gaming related, mm-hmm. Would probably have been kind of looked slightly skeptically pre-pandemic. So in a way, part of our strategy from a community fundraising point of view has always been to try and give people more autonomy over what they wanted to do and how they wanted to engage with the charity. So moving to digital, while it wasn't the thing that you would be doing, you'd almost envisage doing, it created that situation. Mm-hmm, so the same with the retailers. When we moved, we had an online presence, but it wasn't as wrapped up as it needed to be. So I suppose what COVID created the necessity for us to change to meet our audience's needs.
Yeah,
in ways that we probably will keep going. There are certain elements, particularly of retail, I think that we will go back to pre-COVID ways of doing things because people love the high street.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear you say that. Yes, they do. There's nothing like it, I think, particularly a charity shop, which is about rifling through things, finding something, or like, you know, well, I often go with friends and like somebody spotting something for somebody else, or like, you know, you take a section and there's something about that sort of treasure trove aspect of it that you can just cannot, it's wonderful to do online, but yes, that can't be matched, can it?
And that created a challenge for us actually during the pandemic. Is actually, you know, we pre-pandemic we didn't sell our clothes online. We sold cards and stationery and you know, gifts. Whereas actually, you know, trying to recreate that treasure trove element online is really, really difficult because your customer is wanting a different experience. They want to find out something quickly, and they want it to be affordable, and they want to get it the next day. Yes. So it's that Amazon effect, you know, it's that kind of thing where, you know, and you know, I hold my hands up. We can't compete with Amazon. So you know, it's that sort of thing. You have to find your own online niche, and that's something that we're constantly learning. Mm-hmm. On the high street, you know, as you say, it's about that experience, and our whole operation in retail is geared towards that experience, and that is really the future of the high street. If you ask me, it's that, you know,
absolutely.
It's not you go in, you buy something, and you leave. It's you have to feel good about it, and you. Yes. It's that. it's almost that electric feeling of that one-off purchase.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, and that's what we, when you walk into our charity shops, whether it's a boutique or a discount store, you know, in the different demographics that they serve, it's about that feeling. You either you've grabbed yourself a bargain or you've grabbed yourself a one-off vintage piece that or a high street piece that looks amazing and you can't believe that you've got it. You're the only one who's managed to get it at this price with this experience. And on top of that, you get to help people who leave hospital who really need help. So this kind of, that is the bit that is the stuff that we will retain in the high street. And it's very difficult to recreate that online. We tried to do it. We did it with the packaging, with when you sent out the clothes, when people ordered them, everyone got a thank you card and really kind of got a true sense of where everything went and where all the money was going and all that kind of emotional connection that people people deserve to have as customers. But it's not the same as walking into a shop.
I wonder, did you work at all with other charities at the time and thinking about how are other people moving online in terms of their retail offer? How collaborative is the charity sector in that way?
I think it was at that point. I think, the Charity Retail Association itself is always a good place to go for advice and insight into where people are. And I think, what we did when we moved on to our online offer was we actually looked at a lot of what other people were doing and, the challenges that people had faced and tried to, so in a way it was kind of quite helpful because, they'd done it so we didn't have to in that kind of, the tried and tested side of things. But it was... Everyone, it's just more widely in the sector, everyone did come together to help each other out. But understandably, everyone was also focused on the survival of their own charities.
Well, so it's that, quite, yeah.
It's where the headspace is for people. But I think everyone did come together because it was a once in a generation, experience. And everyone did support each other as much as we could, and it's really just sharing information about how everyone's doing various different things. That's still, you have to put it into each individual context though, because as you say, our charity shops are kind of one-offs. They're totally different to the other charity shops in the high street. So what we wanted to do was learn from what other people in the sector had done and try to create something that's a bit more, that was a bit more kind of unique. Now, that was incredibly difficult to do online, and it's something that we're continuing to try and do. It's not something that we're 100% there yet. But then at the same time, we also, it wasn't just clothes that we moved online. So the team were quite entrepreneurial in the sense that, we moved to selling face masks. We promoted them really heavily online as well in the lead up to Christmas. We did a whole series of Christmas face masks as well, Christmas Day.
Nice.
There was quite a lot going on, which was really, really positive on our online retail side of things. And actually, everything, well, again, while all the products were slightly different because of COVID, the brand identity, what we were as a charity and as a charity retail offer didn't change. So, our face masks have tartan all over them because we are a Scottish charity and we are really proud of being Scottish.
Yeah.
And by the way, did we mention we're Scottish? So it's that kind of thing where, that was throughout the pandemic, the things that we did were different, but the way we operated and our philosophy as a charity and our brand identity didn't change much, which is why I think that helped us and stood us in good stead.
That's really interesting. I wonder if the way that you view yourself as a charity, your brand, is that because I was speaking to Carol about how you know, not only as a charity shop do you have to, you know, sell the product, but you also have to really make sure that the people understand, the customers are very clear on where that money is going and where your story is. So telling that story through your store. But I wonder with, you know, because inevitably you will have been opened up to different audiences and different people becoming aware of you as a charity. Has that affected how you tell your story as a brand, do you think? Do you think that will sort of think about, I don't know, how this whole pandemic has played out and how, you know, we maybe think about our bodies differently, our respiratory diseases differently. I don't know, has that kind of factored into thinking about how you plan going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think people are more aware of how fragile life is.
Yeah.
And that for me is from a comms side of things, for our charity, is we help people whose lives change in an instant. So it's that fragility that has been at front and centre as to why we exist. We try and give people that certainty back and that loving of life. And so in a sense, it's kind of re-emphasised what we're about. Reinvigorated what we're about. And so there are now more people in Scotland who are, you know, sadly aware of how in an instant your life can change, in some cases forever. And that's a tragedy, it really is. But you need charities like ours to be able to help people along that incredibly difficult journey. And so so where I think that in a way kind of places us in a place in people's hearts if they actually engage with us. And that's the bit when we're going into next year and the year after, is to try and remind people that we are always there for them. But also that we can only be there for them if people donate, if people buy, if people volunteer. So it's in a way how we tell our story and what we are about has taken on a new resonance because of COVID. We tell the incredibly emotional stories and real stories and the people who we support, but actually they've taken on a different resonance. And you'll see some of the stuff in our shops now. A lot of the messages is about how we're more than a shop. So, you know, we're more than a shop. We're the difference between someone surviving and living. And so that's the heart of what we do. And, you know, in a way, we shouldn't hold back on telling people that's what they are doing by shopping with us or by donating to us. That's what they're doing. You know, they happen to have a great, you know, leather jacket out of it, but they've also helped someone, you know, speak again after a stroke, for instance, or walk again. That's the amazing thing that is about our shops and charity retail in general.
What an incredible service you provide.
But we couldn't do it without people buying things from the shops, and that's the different dimension for charity retail. I suppose, you know, we set ourselves apart from your Primarks, your big high street retailers, who offer fantastic things for people. Don't get me wrong, you know, retail is an experience wherever you go.
Yeah.
But when you go to one of our charity shops, you get that extra added experience that you know you've done good.
Absolutely, and less landfill. So, I'm not mentioning any names. So, what are you keeping from this part then? What is the kind of innovation that you're doing, particularly in retail? Where do you see it going? And what percentage do you feel that the high street stores, the physical stores, will have on you? I'm just looking at that 50% written down beside me. Do you think it'll continue to have that proportion of the income? Is that still going to retain an important part of your strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's but one of the things that we want to focus on as we open up is actually, you know, first and foremost, it's about making sure that opening is a success. And, you know, I think we've seen that with queues around the block and, you know, people donating so much to us. It's been really humbling to see. It's brilliant. People hold us in their hearts so much that they want to help us in that way. So we want to continue that. But at the same time, every person who comes through the door could potentially have more of a story with us than just buying a pair of trousers or a shirt. So it's about moving into that place and really almost having a relationship with every customer that comes through the door that lasts beyond that one transaction. And so that's very much what we're focusing on, because it's not just about raising money. That's also the way of more people realizing that our services are out there, that mm-hmm. if one day it happens to them or their loved ones, that they know who to turn to. So there's a mission in there too. Mm-hmm. And so that's the next step, I think, for our retail experience, is that mm-hmm. our retail experience goes beyond that purchase. Mm-hmm. And you are part of our clan. You are, you're more Scottish than a tin of shortbread. You are the Scottish person who was given to a Scottish charity. And by the way, did we mention we're Scottish?
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing where, so I think that's the next side for us. And there's also, the online side of things is really, really important. And will remain so. I think we need to learn more about how people behave during the pandemic online. My sense is that it's a bit of partly convenience mm-hmm. and partly not being able to do anything else at all. Mm-hmm. So it's that. So we want to maintain the convenience element for people who see it as a way to engage with our charity, but also as a way of buying things. Mm-hmm. But we want people to come to the high street, because if you come to the high street, you will get the best charity shop experience.
Yeah.
That you will get. So and you'll benefit the local community. So it's not going to be either or. But then just to give you an impression, I suppose, as well, of how much in terms of the charity sector, how much online was dominant during the pandemic. Well, actually, it wasn't that dominant at all. So during the October-December period before Christmas, when retail was open, online sales for charity shop chains our size was about 2.73% mm-hmm. of sales. Mm-hmm. Most of the business was actually done when the physical shops were open during that period. So it's kind of quite interesting in the sense that, online is here and it's convenient for people and it's really important, but the high street is here to stay, and it's just evolving.
Yeah.
So that for us over the next couple of years is really making sure that that's the case, treating the people who come through our doors, with respect, but also bringing them closer to our charity. And that's going to be the way we want to take things forward in the future, because it's, the high street's got so much to give, and people who
so
come
much to
us,
give, and it's there's nothing like it. I think it's. I think we talked, earlier in the series, we spoke to an academic, Dr. Sarah Montano. She's a lecturer in marketing at the University of Birmingham. We talked to her about there's a lot that the physical experience gives you that you can't do online, for example, particularly at that point of purchase. Like, there's nothing like somebody's handing you something which you've sought out, you've kind of, you've tried it on, you can visualize yourself in it, and you've done... You often didn't. There's not a lot of browsing happening online. There's a lot of I'm looking for this thing, and do you know what? It's amazing for shopping for groceries, buying toilet roll. Great, because they're joyless, pretty joyless things. Yeah. But there's something about that. I think that's what's so crucial. But I think we're going to see a huge shift on our high streets, and that's what the whole series is talking about. But yeah, fundamentally, it's so important. I think it's amazing. And just something that you've talked so passionately and so with such a great affection about your team and about, the importance of the team. And I just wanted to give people an opportunity to think, because people who'd be listening to this thinking, God, I'd love to get involved, or I've been affected this year, or I know somebody is. How could people get involved with the charity? Could they volunteer?
Yeah, they can, absolutely. And they can volunteer to be part of the retail operation.
So
one of our biggest volunteer operations is retail, because we rely on our volunteers to keep our shops going. Essentially, at the moment, it's all about making sure that we save our shops and save our high street. So if anyone really cares about our shops or cares about our high street and wants to do something on a Saturday afternoon or, as a bit of time to spare during the week, go onto the website and volunteer and say that you're willing to be part of our fantastic retail chain. Because, you know, and that's what's wonderful about what we do is that actually it takes everyone's effort, no matter how small, to actually make it happen. And you get to that point where you're doing something absolutely amazing for people in need. And it's absolutely incredible. So if you want to, if anyone is listening to this and thinks, actually, I'd love to, you can just try it and you'll love it and you'll stay with us for years. So, so please do go online and sign up.
Brilliant. One last thing I wanted to ask you before you headed off was, have you got a charity shop find that you are really particularly delighted with? Or is there anything that you found in a charity shop in one of yours, perhaps, that you thought, oh my God, this is great.
I'd say I'm actually pretty rubbish at, but I used to, when I was a student, I used to go like all around charity shops and some of the stuff that I bought was absolutely terrible. So I can probably tell you a few of the terrible things that I bought. So,
please, anything of note.
An incredibly, a tiny, tinsy, wincy corduroy bomber jacket, which was way too small for me, which was kind of, when I kind of wore it, I thought I was, you know, I was in some indie band or something. And so, that was one of my worst finds, because actually I bought it and I thought it was so cool and I could barely move in it. So, it was one of my friend Gordon and Joanna, who's now my wife, they just both looked at me and just ended themselves laughing. You know, you're not going to name me that. There's some of the stuff that we've put online is absolutely brilliant. I didn't actually buy it fast enough, fortunately, but this, you know, lovely kind of herringbone winter jacket, which was just a nice slim fit, kind of it would have looked brilliant, but then I went to buy it and someone snaffled it already. So, there's so many amazing pieces, you know, there's from your kind of designer, your kind of Gucci's and all that. So people are very generous with some of their really high end stuff. And, you know, that goes very, very quickly. But at the same time, so you have to be in there or you have to go regularly to find them.
Oh, yeah.
But there's also some wonderful high-end high street finds. You know, we get a lot of things in from, you know, people who've got Hobbs coats.
Yeah. Well, I must say, without sounding like a creep, there was one time I was standing outside your shop in Stockbridge, which is obviously known, and for those who are not based in Edinburgh, known for its incredible charity shop selection and very high end. And it's a beautiful, it makes for a wonderful afternoon picking up your tea and cake and your, you know, you're going to get a new top. But there was this woman who was immaculately dressed, like immaculately, and she had about five massive bags. I mean, they were all like Hobbs bags, and she just was running in and just dropping off. And I said to my sister, okay, we'll come back in maybe a couple of hours. Or maybe tomorrow. How long do you think it'll take for them to get it all, bashed up? There's a definitely element of, and that's another element of the charity shop feeling, where you're just like, oh, you know, watching who's dropping off water, like, you know, keeping an eye on things. And yeah, it's really special.
It is really, really special. And it's something that you don't really want to lose. And lots of people donate to us, and they say the reason why they donate to us is because they know that we'll look after their clothes, because people care about the clothes that they wear even beyond wearing them. So for lots of people, it's memories, you know.
Totally.
It's
that kind
of
thing
where, you know, I will remember vividly where I was with that terrible bomber jacket. So, so people do give us their best. We're not just a dumping service for people. People bring their real high quality, pre-loved goods, and they say, look after them for us and make sure you get a good price to help people in need. And that, you know, that's a real responsibility for us, and we treat that you'll see that in our shops, you know, full
I love that. Yeah.
So
I think we've all had that, where we've had that, you know, this piece of clothing has reached the end of the line with me. It's done the stories it can with me, but I want to give it to someone who can just tell its new chapters in its life, which is just...
The same to a jacket. It's not you, it's me.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, we're never meant to be anyway. Do you know what? It's just like... So how does this all translate into how chest, heart and stroke shops feel to their customers? We dropped in to chat with Carol Edmonds, Head of Retail Field Operations at the charity, to find out. So I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about your charity, like, approach to retail, and about what it really means for the charity, and yeah, how you going to go about, what's your approach to kind of designing the stores and where you've taken them so far?
I suppose that the starting point for us really is about the community. So when we think about where we're opening a shop and how we're going to design that shop and fit it out, we base that around the community. So it's really, really important to us that we work with the locals, we work with the communities, and we actually really immerse ourselves within that environment. And we really want to give that community what they need. Mm. So due to that, we do...
How do you do that? Do you think?
We do a lot of research with the local communities, and we recruit staff and we recruit volunteers from those local areas, and we seek lots of input from across the board. We do a lot of research to what our buildings, what our shops used to be as well, and we can try and tap that into it. So a great example for that would be our mm-hmm. shop in Morningside Road within Edinburgh. In years gone by, it was a dairy.
I was just thinking that, yes. So how have you brought that kind of history back into the store then? What have you done there?
We uncovered some tiles in the entranceway that were original existing tiles. So rather than ripping them up and replacing them all, we refurbished them, reconditioned them, and just basically brought them back to life again. We found lots and lots of old black and white photographs of the shops when they were the dairies, and we've put those on display. So again, just trying to really tap into to that sense of history and that tap into that community. A lot of people remember that shop when it was the dairy, so it really taps into something a bit emotional for a lot of people.
Oh, nice. So each store then should tell a different story depending on where it is. It's not this sort of, you don't have a one size fits all, like, here's the how we're going to fit it out. It's very much about responding to the people around you.
Yeah, most definitely. That is always the starting point. Unfortunately, not all of our boutique shops have something that we can tap into and we can utilise with our fit out. But where possible, we absolutely do try. Mm. And what we try to do with the boutique offering is offer that real unique shopping experience where you can get great brands, great designer labels at a great, great price. And it is really about that quality item of stock.
How do you get your stock together? I've always wondered this when I've donated things. Like, how do you weed out the things that maybe aren't for, I mean, do you kind of see what someone's donated and think, that would actually sell better in this store, or that would sell better in that area? And do you do a bit of working out about the demographics, I guess, of who your shoppers are?
Yeah, absolutely. There definitely is an element of that. And within our boutique shops, we find very much that if you put out that real great quality stock, it really reassures your donors that if they've got that great designer item, that actually they can entrust it with us, they can recycle it with us, and it will go to a good home because we'll display it properly and we will sell it, and we'll understand the value of that item and we'll sell it for what it's worth. And generally, as a customer and as a donor, when you see that stock on display, it reassures you and you're more inclined to then donate to us that same quality. For any stock where it's maybe not up to that same standard for boutique shops, we've actually got a second proposition in our discount shops that we offer as well. So by having the two very distinct propositions, it allows us as a charity to maximise our income from our donations. So any stock that is not to that high standard in a boutique shop, we move that on and we'll sell it through our discount shop. And what the discount proposition really is, that is about offering a price-sensitive product in your price-sensitive towns. So again, it's really offering to that community what they need and what they want.
And I think it's really important, isn't it, that that people can see exactly where that goes. And I guess there's a huge part of the store element of a charity shop that has to really remain really connected with where the money's going, as it because I guess people are wanting to understand, like, what exactly this money's being used for, where is it going, who's it helping to support. So not only about, I'm just thinking about that Morningside store, you're telling the story of what the shop was, but also thinking, you know, you have a role to play. You've got your crucial element in supporting a charity that can do these things as well and telling that story,
most definitely. And I think we try and build in our identity as a Scottish charity. And with that, again, we do stand ourselves apart from other charities, because what is important to us is appealing to our donors and to our customers and helping them understand. So part of something that we're really, really passionate about is locality. So while we like to embed ourselves in the community, we like to support local communities, local businesses, local artists. So within our design range, so we sell quite a bit of new products, so Christmas cards, some everyday cards, some gifts. And with those, we work with a lot of small Scottish designers, and we promote their designs and their product through our cards and our gifts.
Oh, I see. Oh, nice. So again, that bespoke offer and doing something that's more tailored to the area and to who you're kind of catering for. So have you noticed a difference in your customer base at all? I don't know how much research you do around this, but there's obviously been a lot of chat about people thinking about ways to live more sustainably, and charity shop shopping is a sort of huge element of that in making, in buying something pre-loved or something that's vintage or something that's just been, someone's kind of grown tired of and have just given away. But have you noticed any difference in who's shopping with you in terms of age groups or, I don't know if you've got any.
Yeah, I mean, over the years, we've certainly noticed a more widespread and a more varied customer base, specifically in our boutique shops, because I think as word spreads about who we are and what we offer, we attract a very wide range of customer, because it is, you'll get somebody from your young student who's coming in looking for oh, it could be anything, something to upcycle. They're looking for a designer brand. And then you've also got your slightly older customer who actually is a real seasoned charity shopper who will maybe shop up and down the street. So we have seen a real variation of customers that are coming into us and certainly donating to us now as well.
Yeah. And I was wondering about you, but I think during that time when, non-essential retail was closed and the charity shops were part of that, but they were closed, and I feel as though, on the 26th of April when it opened up, you must have got a huge onslaught of all the things people didn't want at Christmas, because that's been sitting in people's houses for like 4 months. Did you feel, has there been an uplift in the amount of donations that have happened?
There most definitely has. We kept in contact with our donors throughout lockdown, and we frequently would respond to any messages we received, and we encouraged our donors to hold on to those things for us. We know you're clearing out, we know you want to donate to us, but please just hold on to it until we reopen. So we did find that when we reopened within our first week, we did literally receive thousands of bags of stock, to the point we were actually really, really overwhelmed with the generosity of our donors. Really, really overwhelmed. Some amazing quality of stock was being donated to us. And that means a lot to us, because it means people are still thinking of us. Even though they can't come and visit the bricks and mortar shop, they are still thinking about us and wanting to support who we are and what we do. So it means a lot to us. Every bag donated is worth approximately about £16 to us. So it's incredibly valuable.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, it really, really is. Yeah, and some of the items we get donated are incredible.
Well, that's one thing I was going to ask, actually. What do you know about the kind of most amazing thing you found, or what's been, doesn't necessarily have to be the most valuable, but has there been something you've really been surprised at that you've been donated?
Do you know, we're very often surprised. I think the sheer volume of designer items we have donated to us and the value of them is quite substantial. I think one of the most recent items we sold last week was an Izzy Miyake handbag, which was worth about,
nice.
I think new year's looking at about £600-700. So again, good some Lord. Really great items are donated to us.
Yeah. How do you go about pricing them? Well, do your team sort of go about and do a lot of research? Because the people who work in your stores, I guess, have got to be pretty interested in fashion or pretty interested in retail so maybe they know a little bit about what's valuable when it comes in. But do they do? I've always wondered how they price on things. Just about research, I guess.
It most definitely is, yeah. They really do. They do a lot of research. A lot of time and effort goes into researching some of these items. And I said each shop does have its own bespoke price guide. But where needed, we've also got some specialists that shops sort of can call on and gain some advice. So again, really, really invaluable to us to help us make sure we're maximising the income from these items that have been so generously donated to us.
So we talked a lot about, we've been thinking about how the high street's evolving. And are there any thoughts about, your role in that and your role in the high street, I guess, as it evolves? We talked just before we recorded, listeners, where we're talking about the other challenges, not only about the evolving on the high street, but also all the other challenges that you've had to overcome to make sure that your shop is safe for people to come into. So how has that informed how you've, your approach to the future of retail?
I think that there's almost sort of two things there. I think the most immediate issue is around the safety measures that we've put in place. So we have significant measures that are in place since we've reopened, and that is to protect our customers, our staff, and obviously our volunteers. So we have a quarantine system in place where we quarantine all of our stock that's donated to us, and then that's not handled for a minimum of 48 hours. We've erected cough screens and sneeze screens up at our till points. We've got several hand sanitising stations in every shop. And we've also set a limit on the number of customers that we'll accept in each shop at any given time. And side by side with that, we've also limited the number of staff and volunteers we can have in each shop at any given time. So the safety of our customers, staff and volunteers is absolute paramount. So we have put many, many measures in place to really help protect them and to keep everyone safe. And we don't see these measures disappearing anytime soon. So it's about what we do with that and how we make that work for us moving forward. I think certainly the first week of reopening last week certainly did not impact the performance. Our customers, our donors were more than happy if we were at capacity to queue and wait their turn to come in. Really, really grateful and how understanding they were, abiding by all our security and safety measures.
So this is all extra work the team are putting in as well, not only the kind of the management team, but also the people inside who are running the shops. So how, obviously the majority of them have been furloughed, but how have you kind of kept that motivation within the team? Because, people who are really, well, I always think health charities are very different to other charities in that people have a very deep-seated connection with them, and often it's a very personal connection. And I guess it's about making sure that they feel involved and included and motivated during this time when it has been so difficult and the shops have been shut. I don't know if you have, how's it been with, how's the charity approached that to keep everyone motivated?
I think you're absolutely right there. It's been a very, very, very difficult time, an incredibly difficult time. We lost a lot of our colleagues last year as well, unfortunately, which was just a terrible time for everyone involved to go through. And I think in terms of the actual retail team themselves, it has been a difficult period for all of them. They've lost colleagues, their shops have been closed, open, closed again, and then reopened. And it's been a real up and down sort of 6 months to a year for them all. I think what we did is we made a real concerted effort, is when they were on furlough, is just keeping that communication flowing. Mm-hmm. So really engaging with them as individuals. So, using this time to get in your garden, show us pictures of what you're doing. Talk to us about your dog or what you've planted in your garden. So some just real personal, something that was personal and really, really important to them as individuals. And we made sure that communication was was very informal, but it was also, as I said, it was specific to them as individuals. Mm. We weren't talking to them about work. We weren't talking to them about their shops. It was just about them and how they were managing during lockdown and what support that we could offer them. They might have been furlough, but we're still their employers. And we still want to make sure we were looking after them. So that was really, really important to us. Mm. And that filtered right through to their return. So upon their return, that's when, as you said, they were involved in the reopening. They gave us their feedback, their input. So they were part of that entire process. And that's really, really meant a lot to all of our staff.
I think it's a real difference, isn't it, this year with companies having different conversations with their staff and their teams, thinking whether that's about mental health or about the challenges that we're having with childcare or like the fact that you're in a meeting and the doorbell goes and you've got a delivery through it. We're all having to weather those kind of things. But also when you can't work from home and there's a whole other bunch of challenges for retail. And I think it's really interesting how different companies have evolved to support people during that time. It's really interesting to hear that. Yeah, so I think to close up then, we've talked about, you know, how people are adapting and evolving during this time. And there's a lot of pivoting going on. There's a lot of people thinking on their feet and using different skills and taking that into the future as they go on in retail. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about that. What can people expect from Cheshire and Stroke Scotland in terms of retail and where you see that future going?
Yeah, I think with us, it's still that working with the community and giving our customers or donors what they need and what they want. And I think over the past few months, we have really adapted to the needs and to what's happening. We saw there was an opportunity for us as an organisation. The bricks and mortar shops themselves were closed. More and more customers were therefore moving to online shopping. So an online donated shop is not something that we'd ever done before, but very, very quickly we were able to move and create a proposition online and create a donated clothing online shop. And that was offering up to 1,250 clothing items of key brands that you would normally find in our boutique shops. So we also reviewed our product range, and obviously with the need for physical distancing, wearing face masks, we created our own range of face masks. And in doing so, what we really tried to do was stay true to who we are. So what we did was we offered a bespoke, unique Scottish designs on our face masks. So while we were very, very quickly able to change what we didn't necessarily change who we are. So we offered a new proposition, a new way of shopping, but we did it in our own way, in the Chest, Heart and Stroke Scotland way.
Well, we very much look forward to being in store again and seeing where you go next, and hoping for less turbulent times as we get out of all of this. All that's left to say is just thank you very much, Carol, for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure to meet you and both Laurence today.
Great. No, not at all.
If you've enjoyed the show today, please consider rating the show, writing a review, or telling a friend. It makes a huge difference to people finding us, and we very much appreciate it. Next week, we'll be talking all things department stores with the 20th Century Society. But until then, have a wonderful week, and we'll see you same time, same place. Have a good one. Bye for now. Thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did and you want to support me to continue to make the show, I would love it if you became a patron by clicking the link in the show notes. From as little as the price of a coffee a month, you'll receive behind the scenes content, blog posts and lots more. Click the link in the show notes to find out more, or head to patreon.com/independentthinking. Bye for now.